Hello, all. I'm Megan Bell, Director of Engagement at Daylight, and your host. Welcome to Illuminate Philanthropy, where every episode seeks to brighten the path of philanthropic advisory, elevate the profession, and amplify its impact. In this premiere edition, we're embarking on an insightful journey through the evolving landscape of philanthropic advising. Philanthropy isn't static. It's a dynamic field influenced by emerging trends and shifting paradigms. So if you're ready to gain valuable insight and adapt to the changing tides of philanthropy, you're in the right place. Let's dive in and illuminate the path forward together. In this series, and in our fourth episode of Illuminate Philanthropy, Learning, Practice, and Research, we explore eight key trends shaping philanthropic advising and how advisors can adapt to these trends. We welcome Crystal Tompkins, Director of Strategic Impact, to share the fourth trend with us. Crystal is a seasoned charter advisor in philanthropy and a certified specialist in planned giving, with over 20 years of expertise in nonprofit and family legacy planning. As the former head of philanthropic solutions at BNY Mellon Wealth Management, she led national strategies and managed over 100 nonprofit planned giving programs. Crystal's research on charitable giving behaviors and trends is highly regarded in the field. Founder of True Crystal Consulting, she focuses on empowering BIPOC-led organizations through endowment building and inclusive governance. A sought-after speaker and writer, Crystal contributes to publications like Worth Magazine and Think Advisor and serves on multiple boards, including the Winston-Salem State University Foundation and the Women of Color in Fundraising and Philanthropy. Residing in North Carolina with her husband and their rescue pets, Crystal's passionate about philanthropy and legacy building. And also K-pop. Welcome, Crystal.
Hi, Meg. Thank you so much for that long introduction.
Well, there's a lot to be said about you. That is a condensed version, by the way. We're just so grateful to have you and your expertise with us today. And I know that the goal of our conversation today is to reveal the next trend in our eight trends of philanthropy. But before we get into the trends, Crystal, I would love to learn more about you and your philanthropic journey. Can you share with our listeners what influenced you in your work?
Sure. So first of all, I'm so excited to be here to talk about the trends, but also to share a little bit about my story in hopes that people will be inspired. But my giving journey, I've actually been thinking a lot about my giving journey. I know by the time this airs, it will be later, but right now we are in the midst of National Black Philanthropy Month. And so I've been thinking a lot about my giving journey and sharing that most recently in my blog, Crystal Clear, on the Daylight website. And in thinking about that blog and writing it, one of the calls to action for Black Philanthropy Month is to imagine the future of Black giving. And for me, Black giving starts in the past, and thinking about kind of my journey from growing up right not too far from where I am right now in Kernersville, North Carolina, and thinking ahead to, you know, my role currently at Daylight. It's been quite the journey. And it all started with, you know, my great grandmother and my grandmother. That's where I learned my giving. And it started with humbly putting a nickel or a dime carefully wrapped in toilet paper or Kleenex or whatever it is, into the church plate. That was an honor and a responsibility. And it was something that all of us, you know, generation after generation, we were all encouraged to do that. And that's where it started, because we could not have anything on our own if it wasn't for the help and support of our community. So it started with my great grandma and passed on to my grandma and my mom and then me, and it continues in our family. We are a family of strong Black women and Black men who are really committed to giving back to our communities in whatever ways possible. From, you know, food drives to utilities, supporting people to get the lights on, to keep the lights on. That's how we grew up, in support of each other. And we just always knew that if one of us had, all of us had. And if one of us ate, everybody ate. So that's been my mantra, and kind of that's been the foundation of my giving forever and ever. And it also informs my advising and the work that I do in working with clients, in that, you know, the pie is plenty big. There's no need for competition. We all can collaborate. The pie is so big, everybody can eat. So that's kind of a little bit about my background because that's where I grew up, and I want to continue to pass that legacy on well into the future in my work.
I love that. And it's very clear that you were a philanthropist in the beginning, but maybe didn't identify yourself as a philanthropist.
Oh no, philanthropist, that was a hard word to say even then. So it's been,
Yeah.
and now too. So no, never thought of ourselves as philanthropists, but definitely had that core of giving back from day one. And apt given the conversation we're about to have with the trend.
Exactly. I just want to remind our listeners who joined us for the last three trends that these trends and insights are part of a larger research at Daylight, and they have come from conversations with hundreds of professionals, including wealth advisors, fundraisers, family office staff, donor-advised fund leaders. So, in the past episodes, we explored trend one, which was changing client base. And so, Crystal, it's my understanding that with a changing client base, meaning more women, Generation X, they have more diverse identities. They're more immigrant entrepreneurs than ever before. And so, we just as advisors need to be aware of this changing trend and adapt to it through cultural dexterity and accessibility. The second trend that Tony discussed with us is basically the definitions. Definitions. How do we define philanthropy? We know that philanthropy means love, but when we are talking about philanthropy, the definition we are talking about is all the ways we use all of our resources to benefit others and achieve impact. And the third trend that we also explored was evolving vehicles, the number of vehicles that you can use to give, whether that's charitable, private sector, public policy, or peer-based. So again, just want to remind our listeners that we have reviewed three trends: changing client base, definitions, and the evolving vehicles. So we're here with Crystal today to talk about the fourth trend. So Crystal, what is the fourth trend in philanthropic advising?
Well, the fourth trend is questioning norms.
Ooh.
And, you know, one of the things that has been pervasive in the philanthropic conversation is just how much philanthropy is changing, how dynamic it is, how the conversations are shifting and changing, both in terms of who's having those conversations and what's being said. And one of the things that has really become apparent and is on a lot of people's minds is this idea of rethinking the status quo when it comes to philanthropy. So that's why questioning norms is something that is coming up more and more as people start to interrogate their giving much more thoughtfully and much more strategically, especially in light of the great wealth transfer that is in currently happening. People are thinking about philanthropy differently, thinking about the impact that they're making differently and wondering how and how we got here and really thinking about, you know, what is the status quo and how can we make a difference through our philanthropy in changing that?
What would be an example of one of the norms that we should be questioning, or what is a new norm?
Well, you know, I think there's multiple, but there's four key ones. And of course, you know, I love alliteration. And so we've come up with kind of the top four or the main four, which are examining the past, examining power, interrogating privilege, and then thinking about perpetuity. And so, you know, I'll starting with, you know, thinking about the past and people are really donors and clients are thinking about, you know, how do we obtain this wealth? It's not just, you know, we have a lot of money and we want to give it away, but, you know, thinking about the legacy of wealth and the legacy of, you know, how they came to be wealthy and what, you know, what the history of not only the wealth that they've accumulated, but the communities that were impacted by how that wealth has been accumulated. So thinking about the past and thinking about reparative work or ways that their wealth has not been additive to communities or has been extractive instead, families are really starting to examine that and think about how that can influence or impact their giving today and tomorrow. Then we think about power
Hello.
and this concept of, you know, how money dictates power in a lot of ways, and what that means, especially in terms of philanthropy. You know, one of the definitions of philanthropy is love of humanity, but we also have to think about how power plays into the way that, you know, expression of values what that means for a lot of donors and for a lot of communities. And so families stop and, you know, families and donors and clients thinking about, you know, where does our power come from? What, how do we share power to make sure that, you know, communities and the causes that we are interested in moving forward, how can we make sure that we are approaching philanthropy with a sense of, you know, not, you know, wielding our power to put people at more of a disadvantage, and it put people more at a disadvantage, but rather sharing that power and just really examining what power means and the power dynamics that, that are, you know, always introduced when wealth and money are involved. That, you know, the third P is in privilege and examining privilege and thinking about, you know, how are, you know, what are the reasons, you know, how are the ways that, you know, my lifestyle, my life, my family, and my person and individual as an individual, what kind of advantages does my wealth or my race or ethnicity or, you know, location or, you know, all of those things, what are the ways that we have privilege and how is that impacting the way that we give? How is that impacting the way that, you know, we think about giving in terms of, you know, expressing in the privilege that we have through our wealth, but also thinking about how people perceive that privilege. You know, right. A lot of next generation, a lot of clients in the next generation or people in the next generation, they think about privilege differently. When, you know, I'm coming into this wealth, maybe for the first time in my family, we, you know, this is, you know, emerging wealth for us. What does this look like? What does this mean in terms of, you know, how people perceive of all of the advantages that I come to the table with? And how do I navigate, you know, that money story around the privileges that I have? And then lastly, you know, the fourth P in questioning norms, thinking about perpetuity. And this is one that has been top of mind for a lot of families because, you know, maybe the idea of, you know, setting up an endowment that lasts forever, maybe that's not ideal for the impact that folks want to make. Maybe there are other solutions and other strategies that don't lead themselves to setting up these vehicles in perpetuity, but rather emphasizing impact over a shorter, a more immediate time frame, or just different strategies altogether, as opposed to setting things up for forever and ever. So, you know, thinking about the past and power and privilege and perpetuity, all of these things and all of these elements are parts of conversations now that are really helping families and clients think about, you know, how they want to execute their philanthropic strategy differently.
Right, right. I'm curious. I'm going to put you on the spot here a little bit, Crystal, but is there an example where you can share of where you're seeing shared power working really well? Have you seen it in the field? Is there an example of an organization or folks that you know that are doing that well?
Sure. You know, there's several organizations that are doing that well. And but, you know, I would just say, just generally speaking, you know, from a shared power perspective, I think the idea of, you know, trust-based philanthropy has really taken hold for a lot of, you know, funders as well as nonprofits, and thinking about, hey, who are we to dictate just because of our wealth and privilege? And so we're seeing more and more that this idea of, you know, giving folks who are boots on the ground, doing the work, seats at the table or leading those discussions at the table around what's going to be best? How do we best execute on our values? How do we move and drive these mission and these movements forward? So, you know, that idea of shared power in trust-based philanthropy and you know, just in general, has really come to the forefront and is helping both donors and nonprofits think about the ways that collaboration, shared voices, multiple voices at the table can lead to really, really impactful and transformative change.
Fair point. Trust-based philanthropy is a perfect example of shared power. So what might, of the four Ps, past and privilege and power and perpetuity, what one do you think might be the hardest to adapt to?
I think one of the hardest maybe this idea, and it's one that's come up a lot, is perpetuity for a lot of folks, both from for advisors as well as for the families who are thinking about, changing their approach or, thinking about their approach in general and executing their philanthropic goals. Thinking about this idea of perpetuity, because a lot of the founding families, especially in foundations or in family giving, they've established these tools, they set up these vehicles, they've gone through all of this estate planning process, in hopes that all of that would transition to the next generation and for generations to come. But what we're seeing more and more is sometimes that's not the case. That might not be the interest for the next generation, or the interests are misaligned, or they simply want to go in a different direction. And so now what? Now the family has done all of this elaborate planning, and in a lot of cases have not included the folks that they are passing along these intentions to in those conversations. And now they're having to rethink the strategy around, is this going to last forever? Who am I going to, who is going to take on the mantle of our legacy of giving in the family? And what does that potentially look like? So I think, examining, perpetuity and what that means in families, it's coming up more and more, and it can be quite a difficult conversation, especially when the next generation hasn't been included in those conversations until all of a sudden it's dumped in their laps. It's a very dynamic conversation. We use that word a lot when we're talking about philanthropy in a lot of different contexts, but it is a very dynamic conversation, and you have to navigate so many different aspects, both from the technical and the tools and vehicle side, but also family dynamics and all that comes with that as well.
And that really leads us to why daylight? Like, why does daylight exist? Tell me a little bit more about daylight and your involvement in daylight and why daylight?
So daylight is kind of a culmination of a long relationship that I've had with Dean Nguyen, our CEO and founder of Daylight. Dean and I met over 2 decades ago. I was like 15 and she was like 12 at the time. But we met a long time ago, and just over the course of several decades, our career paths, took different turns in different ways. But we reconnected around this idea of really creating this holistic approach to philanthropic advising. I spent the vast majority of my career in the wealth management space. And what I found was that sometimes that there is this huge disconnect between the tools and the techniques of wealth and estate planning and focusing on the vehicles without a real kind of understanding of how all of the philanthropic conversation comes together around estate planning. And I would, so in my work with nonprofits, I found kind of the opposite effect. There was a lot of information and knowledge and expertise around kind of the ins and outs around, moving families and clients and then moving families and donors to purpose and value, but not a whole lot of experience around either the broader philanthropic landscape or the estate planning and the tools and techniques. And so, Dan and I, we kept, our paths would cross, and we kept saying, this is something that is really needed in our space for people to be able to have those really foundational conversations in cohesive, comprehensive conversations where, you don't need to know everything, but you need to know enough to move the conversation forward and keep your clients engaged around philanthropy, because it's something that they want, but they may not have all the tools, and no one person in sitting at their desk day in and day out can provide every aspect of the philanthropic conversation. But those foundational elements to move that conversation forward, it's not just beneficial for community and purpose and philanthropy. It's beneficial for business. It's beneficial because clients are wanting to have these kinds of conversations, and the more advisors can connect with those clients in that way, that makes those relationships sticky. That makes those relationships, that moves advisors into that space of a trusted advisor. So when Deanne approached me around daylight, I accelerated some plans that I had in motion and was thrilled to be able to join this great team and working with Deanne and Tony and others and you, Meg, around bringing daylight to life. I'll just and just real quick, Meg, I'll just add that there's this other kind of elephant in the room that we don't talk about in the advising space that much, but it is important, and that's ethics. We are, advisors. We are philanthropic advisors doesn't have kind of a standard operating set of rules or governing body like other designations do or other fields of advising do like CPAs or attorneys. But there are elements that we need to be thinking about, and from an ethics perspective, that we bring to the table, that we are aware of and acknowledge as we're working with clients, because this is very sensitive in talking about values and purpose and aligning values and wealth and all of that planning. We need to stay on top of the fact that we need to bring a sense of right into our work, and that's where that ethics piece really comes into play, and we value that and put an emphasis on that in the making it its own separate module
Nice.
in the IPA program, and not just because people need those CEs, right? But really because it's part of the
Yeah.
practice and what we want to move forward.
But let's just really quickly review trend four, which is what you've been here talking about, Crystal. So trend four is questioning norms, right?
Yes, questioning norms, changing the conversations around what is the status quo and how do we want to either retain what's happening with the status quo or move into something and transform our philanthropic conversations into something different. So it's talking about the past, it's talking about power, it's talking about privilege, and it's talking about perpetuity and how we want to think about all of those elements as we transform our philanthropy.
I love that. I love that. So, folks, that is what's trending. That is trend four brought to you by Daylight from Crystal. You're going to see her up next as we talk about trend five. So, please stay tuned as we explore more trends and insights that we really are seeking to inspire meaningful change. If you haven't already, please be sure to check us out on the Daylight website and learn more about their Certified Impact Philanthropy Advisor program. And always remember to subscribe. So, we're going to see you next with Crystal again and the fifth trend of philanthropic advising.